Mike, I'm now recording. You can edit this, and in fact, I'm going to be restarting some sentences if I stumble over them, so that you can go back and eliminate the stumbles. Okay, here goes, Mike. What happens when you die? I don't know. Not having died, that I remember. But I do have a model I consider probable, which is something like this. The general tendency upon death is for your personality consciousness, a mere shell, to be completely dissolved, churned up by the great turbine of the universe, essentially destroyed, while the root self goes on. The root self is that which perceives, which is hidden behind the ego, a pure awareness connected with the great awareness. And it goes on as the force behind the wave in a sea is continued within the sea in some wise, because the sea continues. The wave per se is gone, but the sea it was made of, the fundamental mind behind it all, continues. That is deathless. That is our true originating form. But there is, in this model, no surviving individuality in the sea of consciousness after death unless we create a surviving consciousness in the course of our lives, unless we create a real I am, which is possible to do with conscious efforts in life. The more conscious we are in life, the more we can possibly survive as individuals after death. It was something Carl Jung believed. We have to move against the current of our automatism to create a surviving soul. Then if we've created an individuality that survives, a body of light in some traditions, body Kesjan in others, it may reincarnate or be called to other work in the absolute, the sum total of all things. Or it may wander in a kind of self-created hell if it is obsessed enough for a time. That is just a model based on the better teachings I've come across, the teachings that seem strongest, and based on some personal inner work. What is God? I posit that the consciousness that is the universe is a creation of the universe and not vice versa. It was created as a process within the universe. It didn't create the universe. It may well be the universe becoming aware by degrees of itself. It may well be the universe becoming conscious of itself. It is vast and ubiquitous, but does not control everything, did not create us in the way we think of such things. It does possibly influence the direction of evolution in a subtle way, and gradually creates a related subset of itself, individuals who have lives of their own, but also are part of it, who help allay suffering. They're sometimes called bodhisattvas, without being too strictly Buddhist in definition. They push toward helping the sparks of consciousness in us reunite with the big consciousness as expediently as possible. Another way to express this model of God, it's a consciousness that shares your consciousness of the world. It experiences what you experience, and it experiences itself that way. It's sort of like the value of music. It's sort of like beauty. Well, what good does beauty do? But then again, it's a kind of resource, as beauty is. Now, beauty does have value. It does do something for us. It does return something. But it emerges organically from the nature of things. And that's what God is like. It's something that emerges organically and is perceived in much the way we perceive beauty. And not that everything about it is beautiful in, well, the human sense of what is beautiful. And some would say that there is no consciousness without the big consciousness. There could be analytical operation of an organism, but no experience of selfhood. So it provides the substructure for that experiencing selfhood. Anyway, it's in that direction. Again, this is just a model I'm offering up, like a computer model. this great consciousness, which we sometimes call God, is pervasive and is a component of life itself without having created life. It is not active in the way we think of active in the anthropomorphic fantasy that one sees in the Old Testament. But you are able to be active only because it exists. And it communicates the oneness of things if you turn to it. And this oneness of things is deeply satisfying to take part in, even though paradoxically at the same time, it acknowledges that there are individual objects and nothing less. It is eternal, but then again everything is temporary, so it bridges paradox. It is that which bridges paradox. But all of that is just more inadequate description of the indescribable. What do you think? Start again. What do you understand as consciousness, cognition? What is it? What we usually think of as our mind is a reactive mechanism with very little true lasting self about it. Real free inner consciousness is there but hidden away in us, and we have to reunite with it and then create a sort of special container for it so it can work in an individualistic way before and after death. Consciousness is pure awareness with an existence of its own, and it comes in degrees of fullness within the armature of an organism. The body has a capacity to enhance consciousness's role in our lives, to increase the flow of it through us, through certain esoteric methodologies. That enhancement using the body can be learned. Can we expect evolution or extinction for humanity? Well, probably many intelligent races have come and gone in the universe, destroyed themselves. But I think there are forces who've invested a lot of time and energy in us, who are reluctant to let us destroy ourselves. And that force, those forces, nothing to do with extraterrestrials particularly, nor anyone's conventional idea of angels, that force is trying to help in a subtle way. And though I think we'll wreck this civilization, like totaling a car driven too fast, one of the passengers, let's say, in that car will survive. Something will survive in our civilization. And it will remember. They will remember. And will learn from the accident. Can science and spirituality coexist? It's trite to say, but true, spirituality is a higher science. Spirituality should always use the scientific method. Magical thinking is not going to help anyone's spirituality. People who claim they have the secret usually don't. Spirituality is based on hard, relentless, honest work, inner work, good works, and accepting whatever comes, doing the appropriate thing whatever comes, and not fantasizing about it. Our imaginations are actually a kind of obstacle at times. There's a place for imagination. But spiritual strivers, in my opinion, should have a scientific attitude. I believe skepticism is the left hand of spirituality. I do not think you can move forward without it. The great obstacle to spirituality is the lack of objectivity of seekers. Refusing to take a scientific attitude is sheer cowardice. It's easier to believe in a warm, fuzzy spirituality, but spiritual reality is neither warm nor cold, particularly. It's just what is. It is what it is, as the expression goes. Anyone who rejects Darwin is simply ignorant. Eventually, science and spirituality will merge seamlessly, as they sort of do in books like the Tao of Physics. But that point of view can be distorted. People make unreasonable leaps based on quantum physics. For example, in the What the Bleep movie, the various channelers and other frauds around, they take advantage of our uncomprehension of these profound ideas regarding the quantum physics side of the universe. Scientific method saves us from that sort of exploitation. Trust science first is my advice. I'd listen to an atheist before I'd listen to a person who says rely on faith. or who says, "Follow my guru, he talks to angels." There are many who want to lure us from the path by telling us that they are the path. They creep up from the swamp on both sides of the path, the true path, and crook their finger beckoningly and mutter ingratiating things and try to lure us into the swamp. Don't go with them. Don't assume I've said anything true here either when I speak of God and the afterlife. Find out for yourself. Draw your own conclusions. Test your hypotheses. And that's it.